It's time to go back in time.
I feel as though CM Punk will not end up fighting in the Octagon in 2015. I really do. I have this feeling he will not end up fighting next year. So that is my prediction. However, on the other hand, Brock Lesnar. Lesnar will fight in the UFC before CM Punk ever does. That is my prediction.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
That clip you heard there was from the prediction show I did back in December 2014. Episode 361 of The Sound Off. And to be fair, I thought Brock would be back in UFC in 2015. So I was a year off. But still, here we are, and Brock Lesnar is in fact fighting in the UFC before CM Punk. That was the big blockbuster that broke last night during the UFC 199 pay-per-view. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, welcome to episode 444 of The Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, June 5th. 2016. I am the Solid Monster. Happy birthday goes out to Webmaster Mike from SE Scoops. My gift to you is a new episode of the podcast. You're welcome. We ought to get together, by the way, grab a drink or three. It's been a while. I am back from Cancun. Unfortunately, I wish I could go back. I was down there for a wedding, not my own. My first time in Mexico, also my first time kayaking and snorkeling. I tried all different kinds of things, and I was able to do it in water that you could actually see through. See, the thing is, if I tried to go, like, kayaking here in the Hudson River, God only knows what I would find in the water. I'm kind of afraid to even think. At least no big news broke while I was away, right? that was some sarcasm. We are going to talk about Brock Lesnar and UFC. We'll talk about the brand split, which I have not yet had a chance to talk about. The Hardy Boy segment from the end of Impact. The Ricochet-Will Ospreay match. Just a ton of stuff to get into this week. And we'll do NXT TakeOver predictions as well, because TakeOver's coming up this Wednesday. But first, need to show some love to Audible. As they continue to support this podcast, they are offering a custom URL for you guys to use. You can sample the Audible service free for 30 days. You get one free audio book. When you do sign up, you get to keep that book no matter what. So even if you end your trial, or if you come to the end of the trial and you don't want to continue, that book that you cashed in, you get to keep no matter what. JTG, we've had him on the podcast twice before. Great guy. He's got two books out, both of which are now up on Audible. The new book was just added. In audiobook format, narrated by JTG himself. It is a great book, very funny, probably even more so told by him in his own voice. And you can get that using our Audible URL. So punch in audibletrial.com/solomonster. You got to go through the sign up process. You can't just punch in the link. Punch it in, sign up, and then you can cash in for JTG's book or any book that you want, but you get one. So again, audibletrial.com/solomonster. And also, we have a brand new shirt up in our Pro Wrestling Tees store, prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. We have a Sound Off Girl shirt. We had some requests by people, women, believe it or not, there are a few who listen to this podcast. I know it's hard to believe. But they felt kind of left out by the fact that we had a Sound Off Guy shirt. There really weren't any shirts for the females out there. So we now have our own Sound Off Girl shirt, in the same vein as our Sound Off Guy shirt. So if you have a girlfriend, if you have a female friend that likes wrestling or listens to the podcast, could be a great gift for them. Head on over to the t-shirt store and pick one up. And last but not least, if you like what you hear each week, please consider making a PayPal donation. You could do so on thesolomonster.com. Again, the box isn't there, but the button is. Click the button, and you can leave a donation of whatever you'd like. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname here on the show. And I want to give a shout out to John Loose Cannon Lopez. It would not be a Sound Off week without a donation from John, so thank you. Deadpool James Herrera, James Hollywood Henderson, Yvonne Bruiser Balak, True Grit Tim Goggin, The Chosen Son, Andre Smith, Malicious Intent, Michael Cuomo, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, S. Brown from Chinatown, Dream Chaser, Chauncey Curry, Misfit, Miguel Mendoza, The Irish Assassin, Connor Grennan, The Broward Bully, Eric Monegro, or Monegro, should have asked him before how it's pronounced, Lee Hired Gun, Hyronix, Taboo, Alex Tangen, or Tangen. You know what would be helpful? Let me just interrupt myself here. When you make a donation, if you have a name that, if you are very particular about the way it's pronounced, I mean, some people don't care, but if you want to make sure it's pronounced the right way, and I think most of the time I get it right, but I feel bad when I don't, just put that, you can put like a little note when you make the donation, or if you want to email me separately and just put, you know, PayPal donation in all caps, so that way I can find it. And just let me know. That's probably the easiest thing to do. There were a few names this past week that I had some questions about, but I didn't have a chance to email you guys. So anyway, where was I here? Lee, Hired Gun, Hyronix, Taboo, Alex, Tangen or Tangen, J Money, Jeremy Smithers, The Wisconsin Wildman, Binder Singh, The A-plus Player, Alex Algarin, Made Man, Michael Castelli, The Philly Fanatic, Caliph Kane, Matt Game Over Gafurta, Last Laugh Halen Lee, Stephen Miami Vice, and The Hawaiian Hand Grenade, Derek Shiroma. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate the donations as always. Again, thesolemonster.com is the place to go. Muhammad Ali died on Friday, 74 years old. Would he be the most famous athlete of all time? He'd have to be, right? He would have to be the most famous athlete of all time. I would say that he is. And he was heavily influenced by pro wrestling, Gorgeous George and Classy Freddie Blassie in particular. I remember reading that the whole idea for James Brown to wear a cape came from Gorgeous George. So Gorgeous George probably influenced quite a few people back in the day because he was doing things at that time, you know, on TV. And this is going back now to the 50s. I don't know about the 60s, but the 50s for sure, that nobody else was doing. I mean, he was, you know, you think about pro wrestling in terms of sports entertainment. He may well have been the very first quote-unquote sports entertainer. If you think about the theatrics and the way he dressed and the way he acted. So yeah, Gorgeous George had a big influence on Muhammad Ali as well. You can trace Ali's trash-talking back to wrestling. He had the infamous boxer versus wrestler match with Antonio Inoki back in the 70s, which Ron Darling mentioned during the Mets game last night. I popped when I heard him mention it, as if I needed another reason to love the Mets announcers. I swear to God, these three are the antithesis of the Raw announcers, and I mean that in the best possible way. But the Ali Inoki fight, match, whatever you want to call it, it sucked. It was boring. Inoki just laid on the mat, kicking at Ali's legs most of the time, to the point where Ali had blood clots in his legs, and it almost ended his career. I've heard the stories that, you know, the Nation of Islam had, you know, threatened Inoki that if he put a hand on Ali, they would kill him, and so Inoki just laid on the mat, kicking him instead. I don't know if I buy that. You know, the rules for the fight were so lopsided in Ali's favor. I think it was just a strategy on Inoki's part. He was doing probably one of the few things he was allowed to do in the fight. I think per the rules, I don't think Inoki was allowed to actually wrestle him or grapple with him. So that's probably why he laid on his back for most of it. It wouldn't have made sense for him to stand with Muhammad Ali for obvious reasons. This was Ali. I mean, this was back in the 70s. So, you know, Ali was still, you know, arguably in his prime. And, you know, you're not a boxer and you stand toe-to-toe with maybe the greatest boxer of all time. Probably not a smart move. Apparently, Josh Gross is an MMA reporter. He's coming out with a book about this fight. I think it comes out next week. So talk about great timing. I'm sure he'll talk about why the fight happened the way it did. Gorilla Monsoon once gave Muhammad Ali an airplane spin on WWE television. I think it might have been in the build-up to Ali's fight with Inoki when he made an appearance. He did some stuff. WWE.com on their YouTube channel put up a video of an appearance that Ali made even at a Mid-South wrestling show in 85. I guess this would have probably been after his WrestleMania appearance. I didn't even know that he made an appearance and got physical in Mid-South, but he did. He threw a couple of shots at Jake the Snake Roberts. I had no idea. So, I mean, his involvement with wrestling is actually pretty deep when you look at it. Obviously, he was the ringside enforcer for the very first WrestleMania main event. That was the year after he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And, you know, for all the talk about celebrities in the WWE Hall of Fame, I pitched Andy Kaufman for the Hall of Fame a couple of weeks back on the podcast. How the hell did they never put Muhammad Ali in there? I mean, that would seem like a no-brainer to me, especially with all of his involvement in wrestling over the years. I mean, I part of me just assumed he was in, but I checked. I don't think he is. How is he not put in while he was still alive? But, yeah, some of the greatest quotes of all time came from Ali, or at least he popularized them. I don't know that, I mean, who knows if he came up with all of them on his own. But, you know, you hear, like, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, his hands can't hit what his eyes can't see. Obviously, that's probably the most famous one. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick. That was another one I saw written about. Because now everybody's coming out with their top 10, top 15 list of Ali quotes. And it's fun to read through. Because there's a few, like, genuinely funny ones on there. There was one I saw, I should be a postage stamp. That's the only way I'll ever get licked. He's too ugly to be the world champ. The champ should be pretty like me. Sounds like Vince McMahon's mantra when it comes to Roman Reigns. If WWE had five guys with the charisma that Muhammad Ali had, and actually let them show it, and maybe, you know, a guy like Nakamura in NXT, Nakamura is as charismatic as anybody. And Kevin Owens, I mean, they have guys that are charismatic and have a lot of personality. But I mean, a guy like Ali was on another level. If they had even three guys like him with that kind of charisma, they'd have another boom on their hands. You know, Ali was a one-of-a-kind performer, so very sad to hear him pass away this week. Jimmy Snuka. I want to mention this before we get into everything else. Jimmy Snuka was deemed mentally incompetent to stand trial this week in the murder of his mistress, Nancy Argentino, who died back in 1983. I talked about this case at length, at nauseam, on Sound Off episode 399. If you want all the details, that's the show to go back and listen to. There was a clear history of abuse there in that relationship, and it was coming from one side. Only recently was it revealed that the medical examiner at the time said that Nancy's death should be investigated as a homicide, but for whatever reason, his report was never made public, and it was lost. All these years, 30 years, it was lost. And nobody ever acted on his recommendation. The whole thing, when you really read through and look at the details of this, from what happened to the investigation, or the lack thereof, the way the police handled it, Vince McMahon getting involved, the whole thing reeks of shadiness from the inside out. I was hopeful that Snuka being indicted would lead to a trial, and he might be convicted and would get thrown in jail. But it doesn't look like that's ever going to happen now. They claim he's suffering from dementia. You know, I know he had the stomach cancer. I don't doubt that his health isn't great. You could just look at the guy and tell that he's not in the best of health. You know, the guy's body is beaten to shit. He's 73 years old. The prosecution argued that it was all just an act. You know, he was pretending to be demented, or whatever the right word is. But the judge said that she didn't think that Snuka was smart enough to pull that off. And, you know, I look at that and I say, I don't know. He was smart enough to pretend he didn't understand English when he was questioned by police 30 years ago, to the point that Vince McMahon had to show up and do the talking for him. I mean, the guy's a worker. He has been his entire life. If anybody can act, it's probably Jimmy Snuka. I'd say it's very possible that what we're seeing here is all just an act. I mean, it's just my opinion, of course. They had people interview Snuka and look at his medical records, and there were people who testified. They believed that he was, in fact, suffering from dementia, and he couldn't remember names and dates and stuff like that. And look, maybe they do have scans of the guy's brain that show some kind of damage, but you know what? I would bet that every single wrestler from that era, especially the ones who still wrestle, and Snuka still does, by the way, at least up until a couple of years ago, he was still doing independence. I'm willing to bet that if you scan their brain, all of them would show some kind of damage. Some more than others, but every single one of them would show damage. That alone doesn't mean anything. I mean, Snuka came out with a book only a few years ago, and he certainly didn't have any problems promoting the book and doing interviews about it and answering questions. Now he's got this prospect of a trial looming over his head, and all of a sudden, oh, he's confusing people's names and he can't remember certain things. It all sounds very convenient to me. And it sucks. It sucks because he should have to pay for what he did. And he's not going to. I mean, you know, he's suffering now from whatever health ailments he's suffering from, but that comes with age. You know, that doesn't excuse what happened here. It's not punishment enough for, in my opinion, what clearly happened here. You know, I know Nancy's family won $500,000 wrongful death suit against him 30 years ago, and they still have yet to see a dime from it. So, you know, yeah, the guy's reputation may have suffered a little bit because of it, but believe me, he got off. He's going to get off. He was never punished for it. He was never, he's never going to see the kind of justice that one would hope he would see. And I know he was popular. He's one of the most, you know, famous wrestlers of all time, and he was very talented, blah, blah, blah. So is Chris Benoit. You know what I mean? I mean, that argument doesn't really mean jack shit to me. I don't care how big of a star you are. That doesn't excuse, you know, bad behavior outside the ring. And like I said, this whole thing just reeked of shadiness from day one. And nobody was talking about it until they did, you know, the local newspaper there, I think it was in Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania, did this 30-year anniversary look back at the Snuka case. That and Snuka talking about the friggin' death of Nancy in his own book, which he didn't have to do, but he did. Those two things, all of a sudden, it reignited the whole case. Otherwise, it probably would still be laying dormant and we wouldn't be talking about this. So all these years went by, and all of a sudden it just comes back up to the forefront. They indict the guy. You have some hope that maybe this is actually going to lead to something. And now it's not going to lead to anything. I guess they're going to reconvene in 6 months and they'll reevaluate Snuka in December. I don't see anything changing. I mean, they may do that every 6 months. This guy's not going to trial. He's not going to trial. He's not going to jail. And he's going to get away with it. And I think that sucks. Brock Lesnar is back in the UFC for one night only. UFC 200 coming up on July 9th on pay-per-view. It was made official last night. They had an awesome commercial, hype video, whatever, that aired during UFC 199. Brock appeared in like the last 5 seconds of the ad. I do have to say, it was Ariel Helwani, because this is another story that's kind of growing ever since last night. I see a lot of websites picking up on it. Ariel Helwani is the MMA reporter, very popular MMA reporter, who broke the news before the pay-per-view went on the air. He was there at the show as well. He was covering the show. And right before the main event, UFC management kicked him out of the building and took his credential away and told him that he was banned for life. All because they got scooped by Ariel on the Lesnar news before they could, I guess, surprise everybody with the commercial on the pay-per-view. That is bullshit. Because, you know, here we have a situation where, you know, the guy does his job, okay? He does his job well. And I'm sure it's frustrating for them. I can understand them being frustrated. You know, we see that with WWE and the dirt sheets, the so-called dirt sheets, right? I mean, I can understand that. But the fact that the guy does his job and he gets punished for it, he gets banned for life, is completely ridiculous. It is just a total load of crap. I mean, it would be like Vince McMahon banning Wade Keller from attending all WWE events because he leaked the news early of Seth Rollins, you know, being backstage and coming back at Extreme Rules. I mean, the whole thing is just completely ridiculous. So, hopefully, I mean, even Ariel says in one of his tweets, hopefully cooler heads prevail. He didn't do anything wrong, and I'm sure he didn't. I mean, maybe UFC will come out and say, well, you know, you don't know the full story, and they'll tell us something horrible that he did. I won't hold my breath on that. But if, in fact, that's the reason, because, you know, he pissed them off by leaking the news early, I mean, that's complete bullshit. And hopefully cooler heads will prevail and they'll apologize to him and let the guy do his job, because that I was appalled when I read that. You know, and I deal with the media a lot with what I do for a living. And again, look, like I said, I can understand the frustration dealing with media people. Trust me. Believe me, I can understand that. But that's still no excuse to throw the guy out of the building and rip his credential away from him. I mean, I guess as a company, legally, I suppose they could do whatever they want. You could probably say the same thing about WWE. They could do what they want. It's not like it's against the law, but that doesn't make it right. That doesn't make it. It's like a dictatorship over there. It just, I just was appalled when I read that. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that. We don't know Brock's opponent yet. I guess we're going to find out tomorrow on ESPN Monday night. Supposedly they're going to reveal who Brock Lesnar will be fighting on the show. With the lineup they have now, they're going to make a boatload of money on that show. And you know, it was Brock's rematch with Frank Mir at UFC 100. UFC 100 was like the big show for them when it took place all those years ago. I guess now it's probably, 2010 was UFC 100? It's a good 5 or 6 years ago. And that was a big show, and Brock being in, you know, on the card helped that show do 1.6 million buys on pay-per-view. Short of a big boxing fight, like, you know, I mean, Mayweather and Pacquiao just blew everything else away all time. They did like 4 million buys. But, you know, normally you'll see a buy rate like that for a really big boxing pay-per-view. And UFC has more than a few million-dollar buy rates, or I should say million buy rates, under their belt already. They also do big numbers. I think the biggest buy rate WWE ever did on pay-per-view was probably, I guess there were a couple of WrestleManias. I know the Trump one did maybe 1.2 or 1.3 million, and then the Rock Cena match at 28, I think, did around that. That might be the biggest. I don't think they've ever gone higher than that. So, you know, Brock's got this nice $1.6 million, or I keep saying dollar, $1.6 million buy rate figure under his belt. And I believe that's still the biggest UFC pay-per-view of all time. And now, here comes 200, and you know what? I think this show has a shot at breaking that number. And we'll see what happens, if it's got enough juice to do it. If not, I think it'll come close. Vince McMahon, one would think, is getting something big in return, whether it's money or maybe a deal that allows Ronda Rousey to work a match with WWE at WrestleMania next year, you know, maybe against Stephanie. I mean, we know WWE wanted Rousey for WrestleMania this year. Dana White said no, and then I think she was off in Thailand filming a movie, so she wasn't even available. But Ronda's on the record as saying she wants to do it. She's a big fan of the product. She would love to come back and do something with them or work a match or something. I think even she did an interview once where, you know, it was brought up the fact that Dana is her boss, and Dana flat out said no, and her response was something to the effect of, well, we'll find a way. You know, like one day it will happen, we'll find a way to do it. So I'm sure she would be on board as long as she's free, and again, she's doing more movies now. She's becoming more Rock-esque, where you've got to kind of work around her movie schedule to make things like that work. But I think next year, WrestleMania, if Rousey's game to do it, and if that was part of the deal here. I think, honestly, it's the only outcome that makes sense if you're talking about Stephanie McMahon. All the times, all the people that this woman has slapped in the last few years, in the end, it only makes sense that she would be in the ring with Rousey and have her her arm broken. Her slapping hand broken. Or even better, if you can get Rock on the show and have him team with Rousey, you could do a match where it's Rock and Rousey against Triple H and Stephanie. That was another match that was rumored for WrestleMania. It didn't happen. And it would certainly make sense. If you remember back to the segment at 31, you know, they could always, you know, they could always do that match at 33. Assuming that, you know, Rousey is, maybe Rousey was gotten in exchange for what happened here with Brock. We don't know that. It's all speculation at this point. But I would certainly hope Vince McMahon got something sizable in return. Maybe it's just a whole lot of money, but maybe it's a little bit more than that. And I think Rousey, even though she lost, you know, her last fight, I still think that Rousey is a big draw. That would be a big coup for them for WrestleMania if they could pick her up for the show. Yeah, I heard Conor McGregor. Maybe they got Conor McGregor. Yeah, I mean, Conor McGregor is a huge name, but I would think that's more of a risk that Dana White wouldn't want to take, you know, having him do a proper match. I guess he can make an appearance, but I'm looking at this and I'm going, if they're getting Brock for a fight, they better be getting somebody for a match. Forget an appearance. You know, been there, done that. They got to get somebody for a match, even if it's a tag team match. That's what I'm looking for. So, I mean, WWE and UFC, if you look at this, they're basically co-promoting UFC 200. I mean, when was the last time we saw WWE co-promoting anything with anyone? And that's effectively what's going on here. As they should. I don't fault them for it at all. That's what they should be doing. They're going to get a ton of publicity out of this. They already put a statement out on their website last night. They said, Brock Lesnar remains under contract to WWE. However, he has been granted a one-off opportunity to compete at UFC 200 following this milestone event on July 9th. See, they're already promoting it. Brock will return to WWE for SummerSlam on August 21st, live on the WWE Network. So, some important things there. Number one, it is a one-off. He is still under contract to WWE. They're not, you know, surrendering Brock's contract to Dana White or anything like that. So he is going to be back. He is confirmed, I guess, health pending, of course, for a match at SummerSlam. We don't know who his opponent's going to be. But those are the two big things that come out of that statement. And look, in combat sports, you could say, well, maybe Brock, you know, they'll give him an easy opponent. It doesn't matter. Like, Brock can get hurt. You know, he can get concussed. He could break something. Anything can happen in sports. You know, I mean, you can't predict what's going to happen or who may or may not get hurt. So it's definitely a risk. There's no doubt about it. It's a big risk for WWE. He might lose, and he might lose badly, depending on who he's in that octagon with. I mean, remember, the guy hasn't fought a fight since 2011. That's a long time. Some names that I've seen floating around in different stories, Mark Hunt is the name that seems to be coming up the most. Now, you know, I like UFC, but I don't claim to be up on all their talent, their fighters, the way that I am with wrestling. So I can't say whether that's good news or bad news for Brock Lesnar, but the consensus on Twitter, at least last night, sure seemed to be that if it's Mark Hunt, that's bad news for Brock Lesnar. I've seen some people suggest, well, what about Frank Mir? You know, Brock's had, I think, a couple of fights already with Frank Mir. Mir apparently is still serving a suspension of some kind, so that's not going to happen. Although I did love it when they fought the last time. I loved how Brock would always refer to him as Frank Mir, just to piss him off. I'm almost sure it was just to fuck with the guy. But yeah, he would be doing press conferences and stuff, and he would always refer to him as Frank Mir. It's the funniest fucking thing. Shane Carwin, I saw, he called out Lesnar on Twitter. I'm sure everybody's going to be calling out Brock Lesnar. Brock tapped him out with a choke last time they fought. But, you know, Carwin's almost 3 years older than Brock, and Brock's almost 40. So Brock himself is 39 or 40 or closing in on it. I don't know about that fight. You got Fedor. Fedor is a big MMA name from MMA lore. He's still around. Obviously a lot older, not the Fedor of old. But that's a fight that was rumored many years ago. It didn't happen. Look, however old those two guys may be, and I think Fedor is older than Brock. I could be wrong. I'm not sure. If they were able to put that fight together, probably 5 years too late. But you know what? That would do gigantic box office. You talk about a big fight, big money fight. There it is, right there. But if Brock loses, you do run the risk of killing his mystique in WWE. I mean, depending on how badly he's beaten. I mean, if it's just a complete embarrassment in the first, like, 30 seconds... that's not good. If he holds his own in a long fight and ends up losing, maybe it goes to a decision. You know what? That's not the end of the world. If he wins, then it's a win for everyone. But honestly, I mean, even if he loses, all you really have to do is, you know, work an angle the next time he's on TV. Maybe fans are chanting things at him. You tapped out or you lost or whatever. And Brock just snaps. You know, he just absolutely murders someone on TV. And at that point, I think it'll be fine. Because at the end of the day, even if he loses here, Brock Lesnar, especially in like the WWE world when you see him compared to a lot of the other guys there, Brock Lesnar is still a very scary dude. He is still a very scary-looking, imposing figure on that roster. And that doesn't change, I think, regardless of what happens here. So there's always a way to kind of fix things and work around it if he does lose. I do want to give a shout out to Arnez, one of our listeners on Twitter. He sent this to me, and just in case it goes down this way, I want to make sure I give him credit for it here. He sent me a tweet last night. He proposes that what happens here is Brock beats some kind of scrub opponent at UFC 200, and WWE then starts promoting him as like the unstoppable beast and books him against Roman Reigns for the championship at SummerSlam and has Roman Reigns beat Brock Lesnar to make, you know, Roman look super strong. I would say with them, you know, blowing their load early on the Roman Reigns-Seth Rollins match, it's very possible that Brock Lesnar gets the title match at SummerSlam if he's healthy. I also see lots of people joking about CM Punk as a possible opponent for Brock, which would be awesome were it not for those pesky things called weight classes. I know we don't have those in WWE, but they do have them in UFC. So that's not going to happen. Although, I did pitch a fantasy booking scenario on Twitter last night, which I try not to do, but I just couldn't resist. And I said, and I made it very clear, this comes from the will never ever happen department, so it's not like I'm pitching this as though I have any sense that this might actually happen, but my idea was Vince trades Brock back to UFC in exchange for CM Punk, who Shane McMahon then makes his number one draft pick for SmackDown. So, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, if their goal here, and we're going to talk about the brand stuff in a second, but if their goal here is to really go all in on SmackDown and make that, you know, maybe not the A show, but make that a big deal, make an impression, create a buzz, I can't think of a better way to create a buzz than by doing something like that. Speaking of the draft, I suppose I should finally talk about this since I didn't have a chance to last week. TNA got some bad news while I was away, and that is that SmackDown is going live on Tuesdays, starting July 19th. Or, you know what, maybe it won't be so bad. You know, Dixie Carter loves to talk about the plus threes and plus sevens when it comes to their DVR viewership. Their DVR viewership is likely to grow even more, I think, after this move, unless they move Impact. I didn't get a chance, like I said, to talk about this last week. Obviously, this is a big deal because in moving SmackDown, they've also announced the return of the brand split. And they're going back to unique rosters for Raw and SmackDown. They'll be having a draft lottery at some point. And it also sounds, although this is not confirmed by WWE, but the, I guess, the scuttlebutt is that they are probably going to once again have two world titles. Only a few years after they unified the WWE title and the World Heavyweight title, which was a move that was long, like as in years overdue when they finally did that. And I absolutely don't want to see them undo that, but that's looking like the most likely scenario at this point. You guys know my thoughts on the brand split. I was not a fan of it, at least not the way they were doing it. It was a joke. I just did not like it. I think having two world titles just waters things down. You can headline two house shows, I guess, in one night instead of one with a world title match if you have two belts. But I don't know that there's any evidence that that was making a difference there at the end before they stopped doing it. You know, whatever year it was, 2010 or 2011, whenever they officially stopped or ended the brand split and then eventually they merged the belts, I don't sense there was any, you know, like house shows that were headlined by a world heavyweight title match were doing any differently than a house show would have if you did not have a world championship match in the main event. I don't know that there's any evidence of that. And so I don't want that to be like the sole reason why they would go back to doing it that way. At one point, I mean, they even had brand-specific pay-per-views. And the SmackDown ones, at least, they did so poorly that they just stopped. They just stopped doing it. They started mixing guys from both brands, which defeats the whole purpose of a brand split. SmackDown star started wrestling on Raw. It got to the point where the World Heavyweight Champion was defending the big gold belt in the opening match on Raw, like segment 2 or segment 3 of the show. After like the opening promo would wrap up, you have that first match. That was the World Heavyweight title match. It was just another match. This was back when Del Rio was the champion. I vividly remember this. And they finally put that thing out of its misery. I thought we were done with this. But it appears USA Network is underwhelmed with the way that SmackDown is performing since they moved to USA. And this was a move spurred on largely by USA, not by WWE. Because for all the talk about how, you know, ratings don't matter, we've heard Vince McMahon even say stuff to that effect before at these investor calls, how the ratings are not as important. It's all about all these other things. And as I've said before, that's just flat out not true. That's just not true. And this right here is proof of that. Because when they, you know, when their deal with USA comes up for renewal in the next couple of years, if the ratings continue to go down the way they have been, if they go down even more, they're going to have a very big problem on their hands if USA decides, you know what, it's not worth it for us to spend another $100 million or a couple $100 million to bring WWE back to the network for another 3-year deal or 4-year deal or whatever. We're going to walk away from pro wrestling. Okay, now WWE has its own network now. One of the reasons that Vince McMahon wanted to have this network was the last time they were in this situation where they had to negotiate a new TV contract, they came to the very harsh realization that, wow, nobody's really interested in pro wrestling. They had discussions apparently with all different kinds of networks. They had to go back, you know, they went back to USA. They lost some of their leverage and their bargaining power. Remember when they first went back? Because they came to realize that there is no great big market, as great as they do. I mean, it's still 3 million people that watch Raw every week, whether it's advertising or just the stigma of pro wrestling or whatever it may be. There is not this clamoring by all of these major networks. They're not just coming out of the woodwork to give Vince McMahon a big pot of money to have his TV shows. So it was kind of a scary thing for them. And Vince said, well, we're gonna work to having our new network. Now, finally, all these years later, they have their own network. God forbid if they were ever in that position again, they always have the network to fall back on. If they absolutely had no other choice, Raw got canceled or whatever, they could put Raw and SmackDown on the network. They could do that. But that would be a disaster, because by doing that, you can't grow your audience that way. You know, you're in your own little bubble, you're on your own little network here, and I don't believe you're going to have those same 3 million people willing to pay $9.99 for their network. You'll get a lot of new subscribers, don't get me wrong, and you'll make some more money that way, but you're not going to get 3 million people to buy your network. It's just not going to happen. And when you're off television, you're not on a USA, you're not on an NBC, right? You're kind of out of sight, out of mind. You're in your own little bubble here. You can't grow your audience that way. As it is, they're having a lot of trouble growing their audience, but you've got to be on television. Whether it's cable or network, that's still the best place for them to be. So that's why, you know, I'll get questions sometimes in the mailbag, well, why don't they just put Raw and SmackDown on the network? Because that would be a terrible idea. It might help the network, but you're not going to make up all that other money that you're missing that you would otherwise be paid by an actual network. So it's very important for them to not allow the ratings to dip below a certain point. I don't know that there's a magic number, but that's why, you know, when you hear these things about ratings, they don't matter as much because, you know, the competition between Raw and Nitro isn't there, or because, you know, whatever reasons you hear, the ratings are still very important. You can't just disregard them because they go down. Because you know for a fact that if Raw ratings shot up by like 300% and Raw was pulling a 4 or a 5 in the ratings every week, you'd be getting fucking press releases. You'd be getting so many your head would spin. They would be talking about that. They'd be so happy. They'd be doing cartwheels. But because the ratings aren't so great and because they're going in the other direction, well, you know, the ratings aren't so important and we don't put as much focus on them. But now we're starting to see examples of why they do matter. That's why it's in their best interest to keep USA Network happy. Because USA Network is not very happy right now because they're not number one in the cable ratings. Which is probably the only reason they even brought pro wrestling back in the first place. Was to stay competitive with ESPN and AMC and FX and all these other networks. So they could be, you know, if not number one, you know, at the top. And I think now they're like, you know, typically like number 5 or number 6 or something. So obviously they're not very happy about that. I mean, to me, USA Network is like the biggest heel to me right now because it was supposedly USA that pushed for that third hour of Raw that you know I love so much. And now WWE is reverting back to the brand split, and it sounds like USA may be the reason why. Now, besides splitting up the titles again, if in fact they do that, why do I hate the idea of a brand split so much? You know, it's like, is there nothing positive that could come from it? Of course there is. And I am going to talk about that in a second. But the other reason when, you know, I would answer mailbag questions from you guys about why I hated the idea of the brand split so much. And, you know, unlike the last time they had a brand split, there's one very big change. And that is the fact that Raw is now 3 hours every Monday night. The last time we had a brand split before they killed it, Raw was 2 hours. Okay, there's an extra 60 minutes of TV time on Monday nights now that they have to fill. And it never made sense to me that you would cut your roster in half. Okay, a roster that's been ravaged by injuries lately. You would have SmackDown to 2 hours, but yet you would still keep Raw at 3 hours. And that's exactly what they're doing. If you read the press release, they talk about 5 hours of live television each week. If they were scaling Raw back to 2 hours, they wouldn't be promoting 3 hours of live, or 5 hours, of live TV every single week. So it already feels like they, you know, they when you watch Raw, they pad the show just to kind of fill time. When they cut the roster in half, what makes you think things are going to be any different? You know, this idea that, well, you know, they'll just call up a bunch of guys from NXT to fill the gap. I don't doubt that we're going to get some new faces from NXT out of all of this, but, you know, let's go back to when Raw expanded to 3 hours in 2012. Okay, let's jump back in the New Day time machine and go back in time here. One of the positives that I talked about at the time was the fact that the extra hour, you know, maybe it'll give some of the undercard guys some TV time, right? Meaningful TV time that they would otherwise never get on this show. And what happened? Guys like, you know, Zack Ryder, they got a little more TV time, I guess. Guys like the Social Outcasts are on Raw a little bit more than they would be otherwise. But did it really help any of these guys at all? Is anything really different in that regard? No. All it did was, instead of giving the McMahons one segment to bloviate on the show, now they sometimes get three or four. It was even worse when the Authority was still around. Forget the Shane Stephanie stuff. It was far worse when they were doing this Authority storyline, which went on for you know, years. Literally years. Now, fast forward to today. Why should I expect that things are going to be any different this time around? All you're doing is taking you're taking toys out of the sandbox, right? Raw now has fewer toys to play with. And on top of that, and I admit, this is my own selfishness here, but I resent the fact that I may now be forced to watch SmackDown every week. Okay, I don't like this. I watch enough WWE every single week without having to be bothered by SmackDown. If they take guys like AJ Styles and Kevin Owens and move them to Tuesdays, that makes it a little tougher to sit through Raw, and it gives me an extra show that I now have to watch. Okay, people have asked me, are you going to review SmackDown now? I haven't decided yet, honestly. I'm sure the first few weeks I'll watch. But am I going to start reviewing SmackDown every week? Probably not. I mean, we'll wait and see what happens. Let's see how the rosters pan out and how this all goes, you know, before we decide. At the very least, you know, I'll watch the important stuff. I'll skip the rest. I'll skip the filler. You'll have less filler on SmackDown just because it's a shorter show. You know, but I'm not reviewing the entire show. I have enough that I review. I have enough that I watch. I have enough on my plate. And you know what? Hey, who knows? Maybe SmackDown turns into the A show the way it did back in 2002, and I start watching SmackDown and I start skipping Raw. Right? That might happen too. It's too early without being able to see, you know, what the rosters look like. I can tell you this much. I'm sure the announcing on SmackDown is going to blow Raw out of the water, especially if the rumors are true and they add Corey Graves to make it a three-man booth with Mauro Ranallo and Jerry Lawler, heel Jerry Lawler. That's one big plus, at least for SmackDown, that SmackDown has going for it, is the announcing. As for who ends up where, I don't have any fantasy rosters to give you. I haven't thought that much about this yet, but I did say this right after the news broke. I tweeted this out that same day, that if they do the brand split, you've got to keep John Cena and Roman Reigns apart. One leads Raw, the other leads SmackDown. You can't have two Supermen on the same brand. I saw in the Observer this week, that looks to be the plan. Maybe Reigns on Raw, Cena on SmackDown. Wherever they are, it almost doesn't even matter. It has to be done that way. They have to be kept apart. As far as NXT call-ups go, guys like Joe and Nakamura, and here's what I'm seeing. I'm looking at what's going on right now with NXT, and I'm seeing a Samoa Joe Shinsuke Nakamura main event for the championship at TakeOver in August in Brooklyn. That's the main event that I see. That's my early prediction here. If I'm right, I don't think you can call either guy up just yet, even though either one absolutely belongs on the main roster, and either one would absolutely help either Raw or SmackDown. But I think if that's the end goal here, you don't call those guys up just yet. I think Finn Balor is absolutely getting called up soon, maybe even when they do this draft in July, I guess they'll be doing it. So I think Balor is all but guaranteed to be coming up. I've already pitched the idea of Bayley getting called up the night after SummerSlam in Brooklyn and having a little face-to-face with Sasha Banks, and then from there you kind of keep them apart but start to slowly build to a match between them at next year's WrestleMania. So Bayley will be called up, I believe, later this summer. Guys like Bobby Roode and Eric Young, right? I think they can completely forego NXT, especially Bobby Roode, and they could be surprise picks in the draft whenever they do one. Bobby Roode is a guy who can be, I think, a solid number three or number four heel on either brand, because I think he's better as a heel. And to show you I'm not completely blinded by hatred for this brand split, I do think it could be a big benefit to certain people, and one of those people, I think maybe the key beneficiary of this, is AJ Styles. I think it's very clear that so long as Vince McMahon sees Roman Reigns as the guy, and Seth Rollins now is back, and he's chasing for the title, and John Cena is back, Styles is not getting anywhere near that belt. If he goes to SmackDown, and they do establish a second title, he'll be the champion before this year is over, I guarantee it. And he can have a nice run on top, feuding with John Cena, feuding with, you know, Randy Orton, feuding with Finn Balor, maybe. I think the split would benefit someone like him big time. And I would say the same thing for guys like Kevin Owens. You know, if they don't see Kevin Owens because of the way he looks or whatever, as being someone who can carry the brand by himself or hold the world title, by splitting the brands and putting him on SmackDown, all of a sudden it becomes a lot more likely that we see Kevin Owens getting a run with the title as a top heel at some point. You know, especially if he wins Money in the Bank, like I think he will, and he eventually just cashes in, let's say, for the SmackDown belt. All of a sudden that becomes a lot more likely. Now, on the titles, if they do split them, if they insist on having two world champions, which I would not do, I would have Roman Reigns split time between both brands and be the touring champion, and when he's not feuding with someone, let's say on SmackDown, they could feature the U.S. title more prominently on that show. Let's assume the U.S. title goes to SmackDown and the Intercontinental stays on Raw. I would do it that way and give those belts a little more prestige when the WWE champion isn't on the show. But if they insist on having two belts, and this is important, no more of this WWE champion and world heavyweight champion nonsense. It never made any sense before, and as much as I love the big gold belt, it will not make any more sense now than it did before if they use those same names. The names make no sense. You have brand new belts made, and you call them the Raw title and the SmackDown title. That's it, and you eliminate the WWE title, at least until this whole thing flops again, and they end up merging the rosters back together, which I think is inevitable. That's how you do it. To call them the WWE title and the world title, it just makes absolutely no sense. It was stupid when they did it then. And I know some people won't like that idea. You know, you can't eliminate the WWE title, all that history, all that lineage. It has to be done. It has to be done. You have a champion representing Raw. They're not the WWE champion. If anything, they're the WWE Raw champion. Same with SmackDown. And you have two sets of tag team titles, and you have two women's titles. And again, I don't think they have enough women, honestly, to split the roster in half and keep things fresh. But if they're going to go forward with this, you know, I don't want to see the women's division isolated just on one show. You have them on both shows, and you have two titles. That would be the way to do it. And then maybe you talk about beneficiaries of the brand split. If you do it that way, Becky Lynch can have a run with one of the belts. I think she's also one of the biggest beneficiaries of this. So, you know, they have their own network now. When it comes time for this draft, whenever it is, I mean, I know SmackDown's going live on the 19th, so you would think maybe they'll do it the week before or something. I figure the draft will air on Raw like it did way back when. They ought to go all the way with it and have, like, special draft coverage on the network, kind of like ESPN does with the NFL draft. Or the NBA draft. Try to make it fun. You know, if you're doing this, go all in. Make it fun. Don't just limit the coverage to Raw. They do that with the Slammys, right? It's not the Slammy Awards. It's just fucking Raw with some bad comedy in between. I miss the days when they would have an actual Slammy Awards ceremony. Why not air that on the network? I want to see them doing more of that. And, you know, as far as this thing goes, this would be a good time to get someone like Jonathan Coachman, you know, to anchor coverage of the draft on the network or something. I mean, I guess it'd be even better if you can have them do it on ESPN, but You know, I think that might be a little overkill, but they should do something on their own network, is what I'm trying to say. There's lots of possibilities on how this thing could go. I'll say this. I'm more intrigued, I think, by this brewing new era versus old era storyline on Raw. You've got John Cena calling out the new guy, saying they have to go through me. Sheamus going after Apollo Crews. I wouldn't mind seeing an eventual, and I have no idea if it's leading to this or not, but eventually a Survivor Series match or even like a War Games style match, pitting old against new. I think that could be a lot of fun, you know, provided that the new guys win. By the way, speaking of Sheamus, I saw the new Ninja Turtles movie this weekend. Don't judge me. Sheamus has a role in the movie. He plays Rocksteady. Any fans of the old Turtles cartoon remembers Bebop and Rocksteady. They're both in this movie. Tyler Perry plays Baxter Stockman, which is kind of an odd choice, I think. Only because in the cartoon, Baxter Stockman was like this old-looking white dude with glasses. But you know what? I actually just saw Tyler Perry on the flight home from Mexico. I watched Gone Girl, which is a long movie, by the way. Killed most of the flight for me, though. It was great. So after all these years, I finally saw Gone Girl. I had no idea that Tyler Perry was in the movie. And it's a very frustrating movie to watch, for the record, especially the ending. But I was actually pretty impressed by Tyler Perry in that movie. I mean, I just know him from all those crappy Madea movies, but he's actually a quality actor. So anyway, he's in this movie. Sheamus had a bigger role than I thought he would. I figured he'd have a few scenes, and then he would morph into Rocksteady, and from that point it would just all be CGI. And it is CGI, but they actually kept his voice once he transformed into Rocksteady. So it was a pretty sizable role. I thought he did fine. I mean, he plays a henchman. So it's like, there isn't much acting range required for a role like that. So now, you know, Sheamus and Kevin Nash have something in common. They've both been in Ninja Turtles movies. And the movie itself, it's fine. I mean, it's if you're young enough to remember the old cartoon, it's basically that, but in movie form. And they even use the old theme song in the credits at the end. So just FYI, don't walk out of the theater so quickly when that movie ends. It's actually quite the catchy song. Monday Night Raw was live on Memorial Day from Green Bay, Wisconsin. We found out on Raw that this Hatch thing that WWE has been teasing on social media is actually Goldberg. Goldberg is back. He is the star that WWE, well, I guess 2K brought him in with WWE's approval for their 2K17 video game, which I guess is going to be released in the fall. So they're going to market the game around him. In the past, they've had Sting, they've had the Ultimate Warrior, they've had Brock Lesnar, all of whom eventually ended up working with WWE. Right now, it is just a deal between Goldberg and 2K, although WWE did give their blessing for them to use him and make the deal. Obviously, his split with WWE in 2004 was somewhat, what's the word I'm looking for? Acrimonious, I guess would be a good word for it. He was not happy about the way that WWE used him, and WWE was not happy with him for a variety of different reasons. But they came out with a Goldberg DVD a few years ago, and they still do action figures of him. I mean, he's still, you know, and they sell, and he's still very popular. And WWE Network is apparently adding a Goldberg collection tomorrow. I think it's safe to say that there's a pretty good chance, probably more so now than at any point in the last 12 years, that Goldberg is going to come in. And we probably will get Goldberg back in the ring for at least one more match, maybe at next year's WrestleMania. If you watch the commercial, they show a bunch of cops escorting Goldberg into a police cruiser. And in the reflection of the window, as Goldberg is sitting there, you see the words Suplex City. That got a lot of people talking. When you think of potential opponents for Goldberg, Brock Lesnar, I think, has to be the most likely choice. And Goldberg has done interviews saying he wants to wrestle Brock Lesnar. He would be his choice. Goldberg's last match at WrestleMania in 2004 was against Brock. It did not go well. The fans turned on both guys because they knew both of them were leaving. I think it's still one of the biggest embarrassments in WrestleMania history, but I think that would be the match. That would be the go-to match to do. I think Undertaker, who Goldberg, like many years ago, Goldberg would float Undertaker's name. Oh, I'd love to wrestle Undertaker. But that was so many years ago, and who even knows if Undertaker's coming back for a match? And I've heard all these rumors. I've seen the reports online about there being friction between Undertaker and Vince McMahon, and he was offended that Vince originally pitched, you know, he asked him to put Shane over at WrestleMania, and now Undertaker's not returning his calls. I don't know where this came from. I haven't seen that reported by any reputable websites. I'm not saying it's not true. I don't believe it to be true, but I'm just saying I saw this sprouting up on different websites. I have no idea where this report comes from. So I'm not buying it until I see or hear somebody, you know, who would know, talk about it. But I have not heard about any of this from anybody with any sort of, you know, cachet, I guess you would say. So I don't believe that this is true. But the point is, Undertaker may not come back anyway. You know, for all we know, he may have wrestled his last match. And even if he does come back, I don't know that Goldberg is the best opponent for him. So I don't see that happening. When you think of other guys, you know, Ryback is all but gone. I think his contract is up in August. They may even cut him before then. So, I mean, 3 or 4 years ago, there was talk of maybe doing a Ryback Ryback-Goldberg match because Ryback was getting all the Goldberg chants, and he was even starting to play it up a little bit. But that was, again, so many years ago, and now Goldberg is potentially coming in at a time when Ryback is on the way out, so that's not going to happen. If I had to rank the three most likely or the three best, in my opinion, opponents for Goldberg, I would go in this order. I would go Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, because you could do the Battle of the Spears, and I'm sure they'd want Goldberg to put him over, of course. And here's a third name I'll float, Rusev. I think Rusev, you know, could be a great opponent for Goldberg. And I think it could be a pretty good match. And plus, you know, Rusev is awesome. So he would be kind of a wild card name to throw out there. But I think if they want to go for a high profile name, so in other words, if they were going to do Goldberg against not a top guy, but like somebody, maybe somebody new on the roster, I'm thinking Rusev would be a good choice. But if they wanted like the big marquee main event style match, the only real choices, I think, are Brock Lesnar or Roman Reigns. And you're not going to do Goldberg and Roman as a WrestleMania main event. That could be a main event maybe on another pay-per-view. But Brock and Goldberg, you know, Brock and Goldberg could be second or third from the top on a WrestleMania show. I don't see that as being the main event, although some people might see it that way. But I think you could absolutely do that, and you can promote it as one of maybe two or three main events on the show. I guess you could do Jericho, but I don't think anyone is clamoring to see Goldberg wrestle Chris Jericho. I mean, you do have history there. You could definitely play up the history between them. But again, I don't see that as being a match that people are, you know, dying to see. As for the rest of Raw, I did not think it was a very good show. I think it was just a lot of filler, a lot of wasted time, and expect more of the same if this brand split takes place. There were three things that I liked. I thought the main event six-man tag with the six guys in the Money in the Bank ladder match was really good. Dean Ambrose, Cesaro, and Sami Zayn beat Chris Jericho, Kevin Owens, and Alberto Del Rio. The technical wrestling match that they promoted all week between Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin, it ended instantly when Dolph was putting on the amateur headgear. They were playing up his amateur record from Kent State. Like, they were going all out with this. And he puts the headgear on. He looks like, you know, Rick Steiner was putting the dryer. And immediately, he kicks Baron Corbin in the nutsack and was disqualified. And I just thought that was fantastic. I just really liked that. I thought it was funny. I thought it was clever. I thought it made sense as their never-ending feud here continues. And then you got Dolph getting on the mic. He announces that he's been disqualified, but your loser is still Baron Corbin. And Ziggler just came off as the coolest motherfucker in the world as he was walking out, which, let me tell you, does not happen very often these days with Dolph Ziggler. I will not say that probably ever. But he came off, I thought, very well here, and I enjoyed it. And then you had the big angle on the show, which I loved, which was AJ Styles turning heel on John Cena and reuniting with Gallows and Anderson. And I've seen a lot of reaction to this, positive, I think mostly positive, but positive and negative. The negative coming from people who are very worried, oh, AJ's going to be buried, this is the end of AJ Styles. And you know what? People said the same thing about Roman Reigns when they realized that AJ was going to be feuding with him. And I said it all along. Now, I did make a comment a couple of weeks ago, I think, that when I look back now at the big matches that AJ's had going back to WrestleMania, I mean, he won that four-way on Raw to get the title shot, but he lost to Jericho at WrestleMania. He lost to Roman Reigns at Payback. He lost to Roman Reigns at Extreme Rules. He lost, I think it was to Kevin Owens the next night in the match to qualify for Money in the Bank. So you look at his win-loss record, which I'd like to think counts for something, and it's not been, in that respect, it's not been a good couple of months for AJ Styles. But when you look at how this guy has been featured, and he's been a pretty prominent part of the show, really, if you think about it, ever since WrestleMania. And now he's transitioning from a world title feud, and yes, he didn't win the belt, but okay, so what? He's transitioning from a feud with Roman Reigns, who they're trying to make the guy, to a feud with the guy. Because let's be honest here, John Cena is still the face of the company. And you know that anything John Cena is going to be involved in is going to be pretty prominently featured. So he goes from one high-profile feud to the next. I thought the angle itself was very well done. I didn't see it come. Now, I knew it was happening because I didn't get to watch Raw until Wednesday, so it was already spoiled for me. So maybe I would have even liked it more had I not seen it coming. But it did come out of nowhere. I think it caught a lot of people off guard. I think that, you know, AJ is a heel. I don't really have a problem with it. I think he's a better babyface, but right now they want him as the heel. They reunited him with Anderson and Gallows. I like them being together. So when I look at this angle, the fact that AJ is going to be prominently featured in a feud with John Cena, it's a fresh match that we've never seen before, and you saw them on Raw Monday night when they were in the ring together before the turn happened, and the people were going nuts. I mean, they let the people go. It was like a full 2 or 3 minutes of the people just going back and forth, you know, AJ Styles, let's go Cena, and it felt like a big time, almost like a dream match. And I don't know that I looked at it as a dream match beforehand, but it came off that way. This came off like a very big deal. And so we get a big time match out of it that we've never seen before. We now have AJ back with the club, which is cool. The angle itself I thought was just very well done. AJ beat the crap out of him and then left the ring, ran back in, beat the crap out of him again, got carried away, ran back in the ring again, beat the crap out of John Cena. I was waiting for him to lay him out with a Styles Clash, but he just kept punching him and punching him and punching him. And then he's telling the people, you know, you're welcome, you can thank me, you know, you're welcome and all that stuff. So I just thought that as an angle, it was very well done. And I'm looking forward to the match. And so I know how things have ended before with people when they feud with John Cena. I've talked about it. I'm not blind to it. I'm not an idiot. And look, it could very easily end up that way for AJ Styles. They could have a match, Cena could win, they could have a rematch, Cena could win, and then AJ is relegated to, you know, underneath duty. I don't think that's going to happen here. I'm not saying that Cena is gonna for sure lose. Cena could very well win. But I also don't think it's going to be their only match. I think they'll trade wins back and forth. I don't know if they'll still be feuding come SummerSlam. Maybe they have the blow-off match at SummerSlam, maybe. But I like the position that AJ Styles is in, and I think he'll be okay. And I wouldn't say that for everybody, you know, in a feud with Cena, and a lot of guys were not okay when it was all over. But I'd like to think that they know what they have in Styles. I called him a few weeks ago the MVP of the company. I maintain that. I still think AJ Styles this year so far has been the MVP of WWE. And maybe the biggest revelation, because I don't think anybody expected either him to be in WWE, and if he was, they didn't expect him to keep his name, they didn't expect him to forego NXT, they didn't expect him to be, you know, two, three months in feuding with Roman Reigns for the title and now feuding with John Cena. I don't see in that respect how anybody could really be upset at the position that AJ Styles is in. I mean, what would you like to see him doing? Other than being the champion, okay, I get that. What other thing could AJ Styles be doing that has him featured any better than he is right now? Who else is there to feud with? They don't have a lot of big stars. What, Brock Lesnar? Undertaker? Who else? John Cena and Roman Reigns. Those are the two guys. Those are the two guys that are going to be leading these two brands. And AJ's feuding with both of them. So I don't really see where all of the discontent. I mean, some people are upset about that. I don't see there being a reason to be upset. I mean, I'm going to, you know, wait and see how things play out here. But I, again, with the brand split, I think AJ is going to be one of the biggest beneficiaries of that. I don't think they're out to bury him. I don't think that that's the case at all. I think he's in a pretty damn good position right now. So I love this. I just thought it was a great angle, and I'm optimistic for the future with AJ Styles. Because as much as I'm not a fan of the brand split, I will say it again, the one guy who I think will benefit the most and who may have a title around his waist before this year is over is AJ Styles. Now, the thing I hated the most was that Roman Reigns-Seth Rollins segment. Actually, there were two things I hated on the show, like, a lot. This was one of them. Roman comes out, hated as usual. He again used the line, "I'm not a good guy, I'm not a bad guy, I'm the guy." And all I could think of after he said it was that scene from The Princess Bride with Inigo Montoya and the six-fingered man. Okay, where he keeps repeating the line over and over again. You know, "My name is Inigo Montoya, you killed my father, prepare to die." And he says this over and over and over again. And the six-fingered man just goes, "Stop saying that!" That was me, as I watched this. "Stop saying that!" Rollins comes out, he's got a microphone, he keeps lifting it up to his mouth like he's going to say something, but then he ends up not saying anything. Reminded me of when Jericho came back all those years ago, and he just was cheering and just going nuts and being like, "Yeah!" And he just said nothing, and he left. That was the beginning of his heel turn. I guess they did this for heel heat. It didn't work. It made for a very boring segment to the point where the fans started to chant, "Boring!" It just went on for far too long. Rollins left. Left you with the impression that the segment was over, finally. But then he ran back out. People got excited because they thought he was going to run in the ring and we were going to see, you know, actual action. What a concept. But he stopped short and he went back to the locker room. Then he came out again. Again, he teased getting in the ring, but he stopped. Went to the back. This sucked. This sucked. And I finally got around, by the way, to seeing the Seth Rollins documentary on the network that covered his injury and his recovery. Really good stuff. The problem is, you can't help but come away from it liking the guy and rooting for the guy to get his belt back, like a babyface. But he's not a babyface. He's supposed to be the heel. I after watching this 60-minute documentary here, I have more of a personal connection to Seth Rollins than I've ever had to Roman Reigns. And so even though it kind of makes sense, and I said this when Rollins came back, I said this a couple weeks ago, in trying to justify him coming back as a heel and not a babyface, I said, if you think about it, it does kind of make sense for him to be a heel when he comes back, because that's what he was before. So why exactly would he change so dramatically? But I watched this, and I was just left puzzled by the fact that this guy who got a hero's welcome in his return, and who comes across as this great, humble guy in this documentary, why then are we supposed to boo him? Why, I mean, because that's the part he plays? Because that's what you want us to do? The answer is, the real answer, is because Roman Reigns is their guy, he's the chosen one, and their goal is to get Roman Reigns over at all costs. Even if that means squandering whatever babyface potential that Rollins had when he came back. And you know, some people talk about the boos for Roman only coming from the TV audience. And it's true that, you know, largely it comes from when you watch Raw and SmackDown. Although SmackDown probably, I don't even know, I got so tired of the crowd editing and the crowd sweetening on SmackDown. That's one of the things that makes that show so impossible to watch. And maybe that is the biggest benefit of this whole brand split and everything that's going on. No more crowd sweetening on SmackDown. That probably is the biggest plus of all. They won't have the ability to fuck with the audience reaction the same way they do now. Because it made the show unwatchable. So Roman would come out, and I'm sure they probably muted the crowd or sweetened it up a little bit because they had the chance to do that. Now they won't. But the point I'm trying to make is, you know, there are people who will say that the boos are only coming from the TV fans. Those are not the real fans, right? And he sells a lot of merchandise. He sells a lot of tickets. And on the merchandise stuff, t-shirts and all that, again, I'm not denying that. I'm not saying that's not true. But the idea that he sells all these tickets to the live events, you know, he's like the anchor. Like John Cena once was the anchor. Hulk Hogan once was the anchor. Steve Austin once was the anchor. He's now that guy. He's the anchor. And I'm not convinced that that's the case. I think at this point, it's more the brand that sells. And WWE can pretty much plug any big name in there, and the end result, I don't think, is going to be dramatically different. Unless it's John Cena. Because John Cena, he's been on top for so long, and he's been so established. I think he does have demonstrated drawing power. I don't think Roman Reigns has demonstrated drawing power. The way that, certainly not the way that John Cena does, but I haven't seen anything demonstrated. So I looked at the latest house show numbers. I said, let's just check them out. So I looked at the latest house show numbers that were in the Observer newsletter this week. And granted, this is just 1 week, but it's the latest batch of numbers. And I see the Roman Reigns crew, which is the shows that are led by Roman in the main event. 2,600 fans in Springfield, Illinois. 2,200 in Peoria, Illinois. 2,300 in Madison, Wisconsin. These are not good numbers. Now, the non-Roman Reigns show that they had on May 29th was in La Crosse, Wisconsin. That show did a little bit better, at least. That show did 3,500 people with a main event of Dean Ambrose against Alberto Del Rio. That was the main event. So I'm not sold on this notion that Roman Reigns is the guy that the masses most want to see. Or that doing a double turn, let's say, with him and Rollins, had they gone in that direction, would be some kind of unmitigated disaster. I don't think long-term those numbers would be all that much different, and if anything, maybe they would be a little bit higher if Seth Rollins really did catch fire as a babyface. But the thing is, Roman Reigns would have to turn in that scenario, because if Seth's a babyface and Roman's a babyface, unless the plan is to do a Shield reunion, all of a sudden now you have no real heels on the other side, other than, you know, maybe Jericho and Kevin Owens. So that's the quandary that they find themselves in. That's, I guess, in their mind why, well, we had to keep Rollins heel. My argument is this. He had all of this fire, and you knew people were going to cheer for this guy when he came back. Why kill that? Why not take the chance? And I guess there's still time. They could do a double turn, but again, I've lost all hope. It's very obvious to me that they're not turning this guy. And I think I just think it's a mistake. The other thing I hated was the segment backstage with Stephanie yelling at Charlotte. By the time this was over, I didn't hate Charlotte as a heel, if that's what this was designed to do. I felt sorry for her. I had sympathy for her, standing there, all embarrassed by Stephanie berating her like a child. Stephanie told her to shut your mouth. You don't know who you're talking to. You're not a real champion. You're a waste of talent. All in response to what she did to her father the week before. This coming from the same woman who on TV only a few weeks ago slapped Ric Flair in the face. In the Carolinas, no less. But now she's all upset over what Charlotte did to her father. Oh, what? How could you do such a thing? So not only does she emasculate the women, too. I don't even know what the equivalent word would be for a female, but we'll use emasculate. But this didn't even make any sense. Maybe if they had Shane doing it, but it had, you know, of course, it just had to be Stephanie, because that's what she does. And will Charlotte get her revenge on Stephanie? Does this mean the two of them are going to have a match? Of course not. Of course not. And why would they? Why would they have a match? Who the fuck are we supposed to cheer in a match between Charlotte and Stephanie McMahon? Stephanie? After all the shit that she's done? Charlotte? Charlotte's a heel. They made that very clear with what she said and did to her father a few weeks ago. She just said the most awful things to her dad on TV. A match between the two of them would be a terrible idea. Someone like Bayley or Sasha Banks, that makes sense. That would be fine if they wanted to build to something with them and Stephanie. Although, honestly, you know what? I don't even want to see that. I really keep Sasha and Bayley as far away from this woman as possible. But at least that would make sense. This would not make any sense. So of course it's not leading to a match. It's not leading to anything. This segment was just, it was just dreadful in every way. And to say that to your women's champion, I mean, this was far worse than any of the Hardy stuff on Impact. I'm sorry. I mean, that at least, that was trying to build up a match at least. I don't know what the hell this was trying to do other than build up Stephanie McMahon. Get her over. And trust me, it's only going to get worse before her book comes out. Her book doesn't come out, I think, until September. It's going to get worse before it gets better. Maybe they'll have an index at the end of the book of all the people that she slapped and verbally castrated in the last 3 years, and they can list them in alphabetical order. Speaking of Shane, I never got the chance to talk about his podcast with Mick Foley. I don't even know why they call it a podcast. It's not like it's available to download anywhere. It was an interview. It was not a podcast. Very sensitive to that. This was an interview I was looking forward to a lot. Because I remember many, many, many months ago, they put a poll up on WWE.com. Who would you like to see Steve Austin interview next on his podcast? And they had Shane McMahon, they had The Undertaker, all these people. And if I remember correctly, Shane McMahon, I think, won the vote. I think he got even more votes than The Undertaker. It was like a blowout. People were dying to see Shane McMahon come back and to have him tell all, you know, on Steve Austin's podcast. So Steve Austin was hurt. Foley made mention of that at the beginning of the show, you know, so as to make sure people don't come at him with pitchforks. I didn't steal his spot. He's hurt. He couldn't do it. Foley, I like Foley, and I thought he asked a lot of the right questions. He was not, prepared is not the right word. He was a little choppy, I guess, in terms of his questions and just talking about stuff, and it was a little frustrating to watch. But I think at the end of the day, when the interview was over, I didn't really learn a whole hell of a lot. It was kind of disappointing, to be honest with you. I don't know what I was expecting. If I was expecting something more salacious, maybe that's just my own fault. I don't know. But when it was over, it was like, oh, okay, well, I could have skipped this. And you know, when he talked about the Montreal stuff, you know, giving his and he was there. He was there, as the story goes, and he didn't quite tell the entire story, as it's been documented elsewhere. He kind of told his own version of events, and, you know, Vince did what he had to do, and he did the right thing, and all this other stuff. It's the WWE whitewash version of what happened that night, so that was a little disappointing to hear. But, like I said, I didn't really learn a whole hell of a lot from the interview that I didn't already know about Shane. Maybe I learned a few things here and there about his childhood, but it was a very skippable interview and very disappointing in that respect. And I would hope that one day we'll get that Undertaker interview. Austin did say way back when that Undertaker was game to do it. And I vividly remember WWE putting out a press release a long time ago that mentioned the people that Austin would be interviewing in the months to come. And I think it mentioned Undertaker, Hogan, and Sting. I know Undertaker was definitely mentioned in there, and it just never happened. But I would have to think at some point, especially when the time comes and Undertaker is done, we will eventually get that interview, and I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be a hell of a lot better than what we got here with Shane. I think there was some good stuff in here. He talked about Kurt Angle and the street fight with him in 2001, and they had like a shot of Vince McMahon being all emotional, hugging Shane backstage at WrestleMania. I mean, it wasn't a complete waste of time or anything like that, but it didn't change my mind that the Big Show interview is probably the best of all the people, whether it's Austin, Jericho, Foley now, all the quote-unquote podcasts that they've had on the network. I still maintain that the Austin interview a few months ago with Big Show was the best one that he ever did.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Quick injury update. The Drifter, Elias Sampson, he apparently suffered some sort of ankle injury at the NXT show this weekend in Nashville. The match had to be stopped. He was helped to the back. He left the building on crutches, and he was due to undergo some tests today to find out the extent of the injury. And you guys know, I'm no Drifter fan, but I don't wish injury on anyone, so hopefully it's nothing too serious. NXT this past week, I had two shows to catch up on. I'm not reviewing last week's show. I don't even remember now what happened last week. But I did catch up on everything I missed. This week, I still haven't seen the entire show this week. I'm still catching up. But I did see the sit-down interview that Corey Graves did with Samoa Joe and Finn Balor. Reminded me a little bit of the sit-down before WrestleMania 17, if you remember that, between Steve Austin and The Rock, which was moderated by Jim Ross. They really should do more of these. I mean, to me, they're so much more effective than those in-ring contract signings that they love doing. I thought this was great. I thought Joe was a little... you could clearly tell, especially in the case of Joe, they weren't working off a script. They weren't reading something word for word. This was just them, and it felt real. I'll put it that way. I don't want to knock this because I like the fact that it felt real. And Joe, at some points, was maybe stumbling over his words a little bit, but I think it was done in such a way that it almost enhanced the segment, if that makes sense. I liked it. I liked this whole presentation. I think it added something to the match coming up between them at TakeOver this week. And at TakeOver, I guess they're now billing it as The End. I thought it was TakeOver Revenge. Apparently, it's TakeOver The End. The end of the Joe Balor feud, not the end of NXT, as some people apparently were fearing. And we may as well talk about it here. TakeOver is this Wednesday from Full Sail on the WWE Network. All of these TakeOver specials, they're all must-see. I would recommend you go back and watch every single one of them if you've never seen a TakeOver before. Every single one is fantastic in its own way. They've really created something special here with these. You know, the way that PWG has created something special where they have these instant sellouts and just these like magical shows that have all these great matches. And New Japan has their like the annual G1, which is a big deal. And I mean, I think like every promotion probably has their own special thing going on at some point, whether it's an event or a tournament or whatever. With NXT, the one thing you can always count on no matter what are these TakeOver shows. This is what they have to offer. This is the best of NXT. I don't think this one will be any different. It's another very strong card from top to bottom. We've got the former La Sombra is finally making his debut on TV. I guess they're calling him Andrade Cien Almas. I think on the house shows for like months, they were calling him Manny Andrade, so I guess they changed the name. But anyway, he's making his debut here against Ty Dillinger. Austin Aries, one-on-one with Shinsuke Nakamura, should be a fucking awesome match. Well, I guess we'll do predictions as we go along. Obviously, I think La Sombra is winning in his debut. I think Nakamura beats Aries because I think that the end goal is probably to get the NXT title on Nakamura, maybe at the August TakeOver show. So he's going to win here. We have Asuka defending her NXT Women's Championship against Nia Jax. I think Asuka retains. Is this her first or second defense? She had that match, I think it was at Fan Access with Eva Marie. I don't remember if that was a title match or not. So I think this is either her first or second TV title defense. But I figure Asuka's retaining. We have the Revival challenging American Alpha for the NXT Tag Team Championship. I think American Alpha retains. And then the main event. It is a first ever for NXT steel cage match. Finn Balor challenging Samoa Joe for the NXT Championship. Very much looking forward to this match. And I think Samoa Joe retains. I think they would be kind of crazy, to be honest with you, to take the title of Joe so soon after he won it. Unless they really want Joe on that main roster and they just want to get the belt off of him. But again, both of these guys are going to be on the main roster anyway. And I think Balor's coming up, he's going to be coming up very soon. So to put the title back on him, to me, and he's done all that he can do on this brand, it just doesn't make any sense. And the thing about NXT, and you hear me saying that a lot, this doesn't make any sense, right? I was just saying it earlier on the Stephanie McMahon stuff. You hear me use that expression a lot. Very rarely, if ever, will you hear me complain about things not making sense on NXT or Lucha Underground. So generally speaking, this show, they do tend to, you know, do things that make sense. And I think it makes sense for Joe to retain. And I think he will. And so those are my predictions for NXT TakeOver. It's pretty cut and dry. Let's talk about TNA. Let's talk about Matt and Jeff Hardy and that video. You all know the video I'm talking about. I have been asked by many, many of you, what'd you think? What'd you think of the end of Impact? Isn't this just the worst thing you've ever seen? It's not at all. Not even close. But let me first say this. It was awful. I did think it was awful. I thought it was cringeworthy. Maybe it was designed to come off that way. I would hope not. I would like to think it wasn't designed to come off as cringeworthy and meant to be funny. Just because you don't want to be doing comedy like this with two of your top stars. It's one thing to do corny comedy with a couple of mid-card guys. But these two guys are having a Full Metal Mayhem match at their Slammiversary pay-per-view a week from today. It's the second match from the top, second only to the world title match with Galloway and Lashley. And I also, you know, I think back to when WWE tried comedy in their top storyline with John Cena and DX and Hornswoggle. Remember this? This would have been, I guess, 2009. It almost single-handedly killed the Survivor Series. Literally. That show did such a low number that Vince McMahon booted Survivor Series off their pay-per-view schedule for the following year. Until he changed his mind or he got talked back into it or whatever happened, they brought Survivor Series back, but for a while there, it was gone. And it was because that show did so badly, which is not shocking because why would you expect that people are going to pay $40-something dollars to see a feud that was based around comedy and a midget? I mean, why would they do that? So, it just again, there's people who can play that role and who will do well with that on the card. I don't know that you should be doing that with Matt and Jeff Hardy. Matt Hardy was just the world champion only a few months ago. Jeff Hardy, you know, he could be world champion tomorrow. I mean, he's one of the biggest stars they have. So I think just using them in something like this was kind of foolish. But this was, you know, the other thought I had watching this. And I admit, I have not watched Impact in a long time. Bits and pieces maybe here and there. But, I mean, nothing close to a full episode since I gave up on the show. I mean, God, it's probably 2 years ago now. Maybe a little less. Believe it or not, there was a time when I gave TNA a second chance and I was watching faithfully every week. And I even thought Impact for a time was better than Raw. I mean, go back and listen to those shows that I did. I thought that Impact, week to week, by and large, was a better show than Raw. And I know, given the quality of Raw most weeks, that isn't saying much, but still. This was probably also back when Raw wasn't... actually, I guess Raw would have been 3 hours by that point. Or maybe it wasn't. Actually, Hogan came in... When did Hogan come in? Hogan came in at the end of... Was it the beginning? No, it was the beginning of 2010. So yeah, no. It would have been before Raw went to 3 hours. And Raw was pretty bad even back then, so I don't know what that says, but... ironically, though, when I started watching full-time again, when I picked up with Impact, and I swear this had nothing to do with it, but I started watching the show weekly again when they went live and Brooke Hogan debuted. And it was it just so happened to be the same episode that Brooke Hogan debuted. That's not why I started watching, I assure you. And then after, I'd say, maybe a year and a half or whatever it was, things started to go downhill again. And it got to the point where I said, if they don't turn things around, I'm done. I'm finished. And they didn't. And I gave up. I threw my hands in the air and I said, I'm done. No more second chances. I hear from people time to time, oh, Impact Now isn't that bad. You should give it another shot. Look, maybe it is. Maybe the quality has improved and maybe the show has great matches and things make sense. If it does, great. I say enjoy it. But I gave up a long time ago and I am not giving them a third chance. Doesn't mean that I still can't comment on stuff like this when I see it. And the only reason I even saw it was because TNA posted the entire thing on their Twitter. They posted the entire segment. And I love people. You know, I posted a tweet with a link to the video saying, SmackDown better watch out, right? Or something sarcastic to that effect. And a couple of people got so defensive. Like, listeners of the show, they got so defensive about it. Like, I'm not allowed to comment on anything TNA related without watching the entire show, which is probably the stupidest fucking thing I've heard all week. You know, I appreciate the advice. I'll take it under advisement. But it's like, what these people don't understand is that I used to watch Impact because I enjoyed it. I didn't watch Impact because I felt I had to. I was doing just fine with this show, building an audience, long before I was doing weekly TNA reviews. I mean, Raw, even at its shittiest, is the one show that I have to watch for this podcast, if nothing else. I mean, they still have 3 million people watching every week. TNA has 350,000. And that's on a good week. And God bless Lucha Underground, I love it to death, but they have even less people watching than Impact does. But my point is this, and this is what some people have trouble understanding. When I stopped doing the Impact reviews 2 years ago, or whenever it was, I was expecting some feedback from people asking me to reconsider or telling me, well, I'm not going to listen to your show anymore because you're not reviewing Impact. You know how many emails or tweets I got at that time when I stopped doing the reviews? None. Zero. Goose egg. Not a single one. I didn't lose a single listener because of that. I figured I'm going to lose some, but I lost none. None that I'm aware of. I mean, my numbers certainly didn't change. If I stopped reviewing Raw, it changes the whole podcast. Because Raw, whether you like it or not, is still the show with all the stars. It's still the show that builds to all the pay-per-views. Everything revolves around Monday Night Raw. And if you're going to do a podcast talking WWE, you can't not talk about Raw. I'm going to tell you something. I came back from Mexico. This was late Monday. Raw was still on. It was maybe half over by then. So it's the middle of the show. I walk in the door. At no point did I feel compelled to put the TV on. I was home the next 2 days. At no point on Tuesday did I feel compelled to go back and watch Raw. Because I had other stuff to do. It wasn't until Wednesday afternoon that I finally realized, shit, I should probably go back and watch Raw. I was trying to find anything else to do. And I realized, you know, in that moment I thought to myself, I said, have I become one of those people? You know, where if it wasn't for this show, I would skip Raw altogether. Is that me? Is that how I feel? Because I don't feel that way when it comes to NXT. I don't feel that way when it comes to Lucha Underground. When I have time to catch Ring of Honor, which isn't very often right now, I don't feel that way about ROH. So it's not like I hate wrestling all of a sudden. I mean, I was more concerned about when I came back about going back and catching up on the Lucha Underground episode that I missed the previous week. But I had no real desire to go back and catch up on Raw other than the fact that I felt like I have to. And that kind of scared me a little bit because I never used to feel that way. And it's not as though I hate on Raw every single week or anything like that. But I guess that flame, or whatever you want to call it, it isn't quite as bright as it used to be. But at the end of the day, if I ever stopped reviewing Raw, people would go somewhere else to catch up on the show. Because they can hate on Raw all they want to, but they still want to know what's going on. I can't tell you how many people listen to this podcast and they focus on those Raw reviews because they don't even watch Raw anymore. They rely on me to fill them in on what's going on. Now, they can do that, but I can't. So, at the end of the day, like I said, people will go somewhere else if I just stop talking about Raw. But stopping the Impact reviews, there was absolutely no change whatsoever. It was incredible. It was just business as usual. So when I get a tweet now and then from a TNA fan saying, I have no right to comment on this or that because I didn't watch the entire show, it makes me laugh. I don't even get angry. I just laugh. If there's a segment like this that's being talked about, good, bad, or indifferent, I'm going to talk about it. If there's breaking news on Impact Wrestling or TNA or whatever the fuck they're calling themselves this week, then obviously I'm going to talk about it. Good, bad, or indifferent. Dixie Carter traveling to India is not news. Dixie Carter selling to a new buyer, that's news. And I would talk about it. I would expect that, by the way, that there's probably going to be news very soon on that front. And when there is, I will talk about it. As far as this segment goes, TNA posted the entire thing, including a 5-minute director's cut. They were so proud of this, they posted a director's cut version, so I watched it. And it was bad. But here's why I don't think it was as bad as people are making it out to be. You know, the worst thing ever. I said earlier, I was far more appalled by that Stephanie McMahon Charlotte segment backstage on Raw than by anything I saw here with Matt and Jeff Hardy. First of all, the biggest belly laugh I had all week was the part where Matt Hardy tries to roll out of the ring under the bottom rope and gets stuck. That was absolute comedy gold. Whether it was and you know what? I bet it wasn't intended. The fact that that probably wasn't even planned that way, and they chose not to reshoot it, even though it was a taped segment and they could have reshot the damn thing, that makes it even better. And the other reason it was probably a good thing for TNA is because look at how many people are talking about TNA. How many people even knew that they had a pay-per-view next Sunday? Now, everybody knows. Doesn't mean they're going to buy it, but everybody knows. Everybody knows that Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy are having a match. Everybody knows that Matt Hardy is fucking nuts. And yes, the segment was embarrassing as all hell to watch, and I have no idea why Matt Hardy is speaking with an accent, or what accent that's supposed to be. But more people are talking about TNA now than they have in a long-ass time. And when they have a pay-per-view to promote, you know what? That's not the worst thing in the world. I don't know how this is supposed to get people to pay $35 or $45 to watch that show, but at least people are talking about it. So in that regard, it was a plus. But yes, the acting was horrendous, and Matt Hardy's hair looks like, you know, Dr. Emmett Brown with a bad dye job. I don't know what's going on with that hair. Or the accent, or anything involving Matt Hardy. This for somebody who hasn't really been watching Impact, this was quite the reintroduction to Matt Hardy. Because I knew he won the TNA title. I knew he was calling himself Big Money Matt. He was bringing his kid on the show. You know, and that's fine. You know, good heat. You know, I make more money than you. I'm better than you. But this, I don't know the backstory here, but this was, as a person who is seeing this side of Matt Hardy for the first time. This was something else. But him getting stuck rolling out of the ring was seriously, like no joke, the funniest thing I saw all week. I did catch up on last week's Lucha Underground, which I missed. That was the show where Cage beat Chavo to win the Gift of the Gods title, and then immediately cashed it in for a title shot against Matanza on this week's show. This week featured two title matches, Prince Puma, Dragon Azteca Jr. and Rey Mysterio Jr. against the new Trios Tag Team Champions, Jack Evans, PJ Black, and Johnny Mundo. Fun match. The story here is that the heels keep kicking the babyfaces in the nuts. They did it to win the Trios titles a few weeks ago, and they did it again here in this match. You know, I mean, it worked for The Undertaker, so why not, right? So Mundo kicks Dragon Azteca right in his little dragons. And this pisses Prince Puma the fuck off. He is angry. And Puma gets in the ring, and he kicks Mundo right in his shining stars. Referee sees it. He disqualifies the babyfaces. Puma let his emotions get the best of him, and it cost his team the match. Second time this week that a babyface intentionally kicked someone in the testes for the DQ. He then super kicked the hell out of Taya. Mysterio now trying to hold Puma back to control him. It's a side of the Prince Puma character we haven't seen on this show yet. Very heelish. I liked it. You would think by now, though, that these guys would know to wear cups. But Brock Lesnar never seemed to figure that one out either. Main event was Matanza and Cage for the Lucha Underground Championship. This was a great match. Two of the more athletically gifted big men, I think, in all of wrestling right now. At one point, they were each hitting each other with German suplexes and just completely no-selling them. Cage would hit one, Matanza would get right back up. Matanza would hit one, Cage would get right back up. I bet Vince Russo must have hated all of this tumbling and no-selling that was going on here. Matanza won with his Wrath of the Gods slam, which I thought came up a little anticlimactic given everything else they hit each other with, that it would take just one power slam to beat Cage. But, you know, I guess you could argue that all those other moves took so much out of him, and that's why it only took one to beat him. I still think it came off flat. But the match was still really good, and El Rey has the entire thing up on their YouTube channel if you missed it. So that's kind of the Cliff Notes version of my thoughts on Lucha Underground this week. Let's get to the mailbag. I'll just get to a few questions here because my voice is just going here. This is not good. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. George wrote in with an email titled, CM Punk Still Hates Stephanie. So I opened it. This is what he says. He says, while looking to see if CM Punk had tweeted anything about Brock Lesnar fighting in the UFC, I noticed one of the things he recently liked was Batista's post ripping into Stephanie McMahon's slap and what it does for the roster. So I checked this out myself, and indeed, CM Punk did like, or favorite, or whatever the word is this week, he liked Batista's tweet. And I think we all like Batista's tweet, because it's true. And also, because so many of you have asked me about this, not just one person, I got multiple emails, I figure I'll talk about it here. I wanted to just very briefly give my thoughts on the Ricochet-Will Ospreay match from the New Japan Best of the Super Juniors tournament. Match took place, I think, while I was away. I finally had a chance to watch it. New Japan put it up for free. Very wise of them to do that with all the buzz around it. They put the match up for free on New Japan World, so I watched it there. And I thought it was a great match. I really enjoyed it. I mean, Ricochet is one of the most talented guys in all of wrestling. Will Ospreay is a star on the rise. He'll be a big, big name one day. And I thought these two went in there and they had just a fantastic match. And I know Vader had some unkind things to say about it. He was tweeting, it was like a memorized gymnastics routine, and he's sad to see where wrestling is headed. I know that the animated GIFs, I guess, were all over Twitter, and even some news websites or sports websites were using it. It's like a 30-second or like a 50-second clip of the match. The match itself was like 15, 20 minutes. I think if you watch the entire match, I don't see what there is to be upset about. I guess people are upset. There's no selling. They're just doing moves for the sake of doing moves. There were a lot of wild flips and stuff, and there was one kind of, I guess you'd call it a routine if you want, or sequence, earlier in the match that it did come off a little bit rehearsed, but after that, you know, they went on to have a great match, and I don't know, I saw plenty of selling and near falls, and, you know, I didn't see anything wrong with it. I think people are just getting sand in their vagina for the sake of getting sand in their vagina. I really don't see what the big deal is here. I have seen independent wrestling matches in person and also on Vimeo and Daily Motion and YouTube and all that that were far worse. That literally were just, okay, you do your move, I'll do my move, you do your move, I'll do my move, I'll do a flip, you'll do a flip, let's botch this, botch that, and that's the entire match. That's not what I saw here. So I don't really see what the big deal is. I mean, this thing, it kind of blew up into something huge. I mean, I'm reading about it while I'm down in Mexico. I'm like, shit, what the hell did I miss? And I'm trying to find the match, and I can't find it. I'm like, I got to watch this when I get home. So I'm watching this thinking I'm gonna come away from this just like cringing. Or it's nope. I watched it, and I thought it was great. I think people are making a big deal about nothing. And even William Regal. I mean, there were people that came to the defense of Ricochet and Will Ospreay. I mean, Vader said what he said. I don't doubt that there's other wrestlers, there's other legends who probably feel the same way he does, whether they want to admit it or not. Some of you may feel the same way as Vader did. And that's certainly your prerogative, but I think that you're making a big deal about nothing. William Regal had this long post or this long series of tweets. I don't know that he specifically named this match, but it was very obvious that he was referring to this match, and he had very positive comments to say about it. It's just a different style. It's not better. It's not worse. You know, it's two young guys just going out there and doing what they do best, and I mean, I don't know. I saw plenty of psychology there toward the end of the match, so I'm more in the Regal camp than I am the Vader camp. Faik from Dubai. I'm sure you've seen the WWE 2K17 trailer featuring Goldberg, and history dictates that people featured in this sort of trailer usually end up singing, excuse me, usually end up singing, or signing, he says singing, that'd be kind of cool actually if he did sing, signing with WWE and having a short run. The ending of the trailer showed a Suplex City sign in the reflection of the cop car window. Who do you think should go over in a Lesnar-Goldberg match? If Brock goes over, then it's just another case of Brock being Brock and destroying someone clean, and it makes Goldberg's value decrease. But Goldberg is in his 40s. Goldberg's almost 50. So surely him going over would not benefit the company either. So who do you think should win? I don't know, but what's this whole Brock being Brock? I don't understand. Brock is Brock for a reason. Brock beats people and wins because he's Brock Lesnar and because there's nobody like him on the roster. And hopefully at some point somebody will come along and beat him and it'll help that person. It'll help elevate that person. I don't think Roman Reigns needs that. I hope they don't waste it on him. Although, again, I wouldn't be surprised if they did. But I got no problem with the way they booked Brock. It's fine with me. He's a special guy. As far as Goldberg is concerned, the way I look at it, if they had a match, I tend to think that Brock is probably the one guy Goldberg wouldn't care. Like, if they came to him and said, all right, listen, we're going to bring you in for a match. It's going to be against Brock, and you're going to lose. I don't think Goldberg's pitching a fit. I think as long as you pay him all the money he wants and you give him the match he wants, Brock's probably the one guy he probably wouldn't mind losing to. So between that and the fact that the last time they met, if you remember, Goldberg beat Brock, I think it's about time for Brock to get his win back. It's not 50-50 booking if there's, what, 12 years between matches. I think that's okay. But also because I don't see Goldberg coming back for more than maybe one or two matches. I don't think Goldberg's coming back and having a run. I think one match at WrestleMania, maybe a second, and that's probably it. I think with him, it's in and out. You know, if anything, I think it's been well demonstrated by Goldberg over the years that he's not married to pro wrestling. He doesn't love pro wrestling. He doesn't need pro wrestling. And if he's not happy about whatever, he'll just leave. So I don't see him getting a run. I see him getting a match. And if that's the case, Brock sticking around, there's far more value in Brock Lesnar than Goldberg. So Brock should win. Joe from Nottingham, England. I'm a big fan of Tyler Breeze like yourself. I'm an even bigger fan of Johnny Curtis, who is Fandango, of course. What would you say to the idea of this ridiculous team of Breezango splitting just before the draft? Johnny Curtis returns under that name, and he's drafted to SmackDown. Tyler Breeze would then stay on Raw and hopefully be a mid-carder. Then while on SmackDown, Curtis debuts a new partner in the form of the Perfect 10, Ty Dillinger. It could even be called something like Team 100, as 10 times 10 equals 100. What are your thoughts? Not really a fan of the idea. You know, the sad thing is that this Breezango team, as ridiculous as that fucking name is, this team is probably the best thing for those guys right now. And it pains me to say that, the fact that the best they could do with Tyler Breeze is to team him up with fucking Fandango. I just think that's just such a fucking insult. But, you know, it's getting him on TV. And he's even got a couple of wins recently. So, begrudgingly, I think this Breezango team is probably the best thing for him. And I don't trust that if they split them up, you know, he'll be a solid mid-carder. No, I don't buy it. I just don't think they see him as having any tremendous value. I think that's a mistake. I think he could be a solid, you know, middle of the card guy. And I think without this team, he's lucky to even get on TV in the first place. So just keep the team going as long as they can. Zach House of Pain Holker from Preston, England. In the UK, we had a show called One Versus 100 that aired on BBC One. It's a quiz show that pits one person against 100, and if you get a question wrong, you lose. The aim is to be the last man standing. Could WWE use this concept with its talent and air a WWE quiz show that viewers can vote on during the show, and the person at home who gets the highest points or fastest time wins WWE merchandise? This could provide great entertainment with superstars and draw older fans to the network to test their knowledge. I think the idea of a quiz show or like a trivia show of some kind on the network is a great idea. But we already had One Versus 100 here. It was on U.S. television. They had Bob Saget as the host. The guy from Full House, I'm sure some of you know. I mean, he's done other things, but he's most well known for being on Full House. He's on Fuller House now, too, by the way. Great show. They already adapted that show here in the U.S., and it didn't last very long. I think it lasted like a couple of years. I don't even think it's on TV anymore. But it was an NBC show. I'm not even sure WWE would be allowed to use that show, so I think it's probably a moot point. But, you know, it's been a while. I used to watch, there was a show on, they have Game Show Network here in this country, and they had a show, I don't think it's on anymore, called Lingo, which was hosted by Chuck Woolery, who used to host Oh my God, Love Connection. I think he's hosted a few shows, but he hosted a show called Lingo for a while. I was big time into it. I loved the show. Very sad it's not around anymore. But I would watch Game Show Network, or sometimes I'd fall asleep with it on, and they had, like, at midnight, I don't know if they still do this, they had, like, this live interactive show. So people would, like, I don't know if they would call in necessarily, but they would somehow, maybe through social media or whatever, they would participate, they would play online. It was actually kind of cool. It was like this live show at midnight. So I think WWE doing something like that, like you said, have the audience interaction. It could be some kind of trivia show, quiz show or something. Maybe not at midnight, but they could do something weekly on the network, something live, and have Renee, or not even Renee Young. They have this new woman, the backstage interviewer that they have, I think, for NXT, Kathy or Katie or something, whatever her name is. You know, have her host it. You know, I think they could do something like that on the network. I think that could be fun. Zach had a second question, so I'll use it here. Which woman will benefit more from the draft? In my opinion, if Summer Rae is able to get more TV time, she could develop into the Barbie bitch that she played so well on NXT. She did. She did play that very well on NXT. She was actually a pretty good wrestler. And I have no idea why they almost like demoted her once she hit the main roster. We really don't have a chance to see. I'm not trying to make her out to be like fucking Trish Stratus or Sasha Banks or anything like that, but she's pretty good. So it would be nice to see her do more, but she's not the one. I mean, I think it's Becky Lynch. I think Becky Lynch by far has the most to gain from the brand split. And if they have two women's titles, she'll end up with one of them for sure. Dominic from Great Mills, Maryland, buy or sell on the WrestleMania 20 triple threat for the World Heavyweight Championship or Armageddon 2008 triple threat for the WWE Championship. Triple H versus Shawn Michaels versus Chris Benoit with Benoit finally winning the belt, or Edge versus Triple H versus Jeff Hardy with Hardy finally realizing the dream of a lifetime. I would also like to hear your opinion on that Armageddon 08 match. I think it is severely underrated. I saw the match many months ago. I don't even know why, because I wasn't watching Armageddon, but I saw that match. The thing about that, it was a good match. I think it is probably somewhat underrated. The thing about that match, you know what's underrated? I'll tell you what's underrated. What stands out to me about that match is the finish. There's a part in the match where Edge is in the ring, and he has a steel chair, and he lifts the chair over his head, and Jeff Hardy, I guess, is out on the apron. He reaches up, he grabs the chair out of Edge's hand. As soon as Edge turns around, now Hardy wasn't even holding the chair by the legs. He was just kind of holding it by the side. He just reared back and he fucking waffled Edge upside the head with that. I mean, this was a sick chair shot. And it just knocked Edge out. That's the thing about the finish that stands out to me. That and there's clearly a part when the match ends on commentary. It was I think Jim Ross and Taz called that match. And it's so clear if you listen to the commentary that as Hardy is celebrating his win, Taz is in the middle of talking. And I think he's in the middle of like congratulating Jeff Hardy. And it's so obvious that Vince McMahon is in his ear basically telling him to shut the fuck up. Because like in mid-sentence, all of a sudden, Taz goes silent. He goes silent. The announcers go silent. You know, they want people to soak up the moment. Like for whatever reason, those are the things that stand out to me the most. But no, it was actually a really good match. As far as buy or sell on which one, I mean, as the bigger moment, you got to go with WrestleMania. It's WrestleMania. I thought that was the better match. And, you know, Benoit winning the world title, you know, in WWE for the first time and the way they played it up, and it's the WrestleMania main event, Madison Square Garden. I mean, it was a big moment for Jeff Hardy to win the belt, but you can't argue that it was a bigger moment than the end of the Benoit match at WrestleMania 20. So I'm going to buy on that, and I'm going to sell on the Armageddon match, which probably is underrated. All right, for those of you that don't know, I want to mention this. The Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary is now on Netflix. I've got a lot of messages from people seeing it for the first time, sending me the screenshots of the scene that has my Layfield Report column in it. I talked about this months ago, but honestly, it never gets old. So it's absolutely worth going out of your way to see. It's a great film, and you should all check it out. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster is my handle. We'll be back with the usual Raw poll when Raw goes off the air Monday night. You can vote, thumbs up, thumbs down. I want to take a moment here again to thank everybody who supports this podcast just by listening, sharing the links with other people, retweeting stuff that I post on Twitter, and also the people that put their, you know, their money down. You know, they make PayPal donations, who buy t-shirts in our store. I really very much appreciate all the support, especially when we have a big show like this week. I was up all night after the Lesnar stuff broke. It's like, oh man, I had to reshuffle things. I had to take things out, put things in, and you know, research things. And there's a lot of work, a lot of time that goes into putting these shows together. So when I see that I see things reciprocated from you guys in the form of all those donations and shirts and whatnot, it means a lot to me. So I just want to say thank you. We will be back with episode 445 of the podcast next weekend and hopefully be fully back into the swing of things. I'm still going through emails and catching up on work and all this kind of stuff from the trip. So I'm not quite back into things yet fully, but I think I will be in the next few days. So until next weekend, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. Enjoy NXT TakeOver on Wednesday, because I know I will. And we will see you right back here again next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay. That's racist.
Well, no, it's not. That's just
racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, that those are the racists.
Solomonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.